welcome to More Like Radio's Game of Thrones, Wieners, and Such. We are live today, Monday, the 16th of May, the day after episode 4 of season 6 of Game of Thrones aired, which is called The Book of the Stranger. Joined by Marie Lopez.
A girl has no name.
Mitch Heil.
He's upstairs with the dog.
That's Sherry.
It's me.
She speaks for Lord Heel. Andrew Black, Rorschach.
Hey, everybody.
And I am Lord Royce of House Lopez. We are live today after, I think, one of the best episodes, not just of the season, but of, like, the show.
You think this was the best episode?
One of the. I didn't say the. I said one.
Like, so, Hard Home was pretty good.
I didn't say the best. I said one of the.
Okay.
You wouldn't agree it was one of the?
Yeah. I mean, but, like, Red Wedding's probably still up there, and, you know.
I like the White Wedding more.
Oh, yeah. Or the Purple Wedding.
Well, that's because you're
which
racist.
Which is the one that Joffrey died in. That was a good one, too.
Oh, no. I meant the song. Billy Idol.
So,
But, yes. This episode was the shit.
Yeah. And again, it's episode 4, Book of the Stranger. Before we get into it, what did you guys think of the episode overall? I mean, obviously, you know my opinion, but
I thought it was probably one of the most happy emotional episodes they've had in a long time.
Yes. Which to me means something terrible is going to happen. You know what I mean? That's what always happens.
Right.
I mean, only one person died.
And that's pretty good for that show.
Not two people. There was the two Dothraki.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Fair, and then
there was the whole temple. But they're not people.
You know what? We're living in a post-Joffrey world, and we just can't say those things anymore, okay?
I meant people that you're only introduced to then get taken away from.
And for a PC Westeros. I've been saying that for a very, very long time.
I'm a Mac guy myself.
No. Politically correct. And you are not a Mac guy.
I meant like the Mac makeup. I like to wear it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we start the episode with. Do we start the episode with a Stark? Yeah, with Jon Snow. Sitting at the this confused me a little bit because he's still at the Night's Watch, and didn't they make it seem like he left?
Yeah,
right.
I thought he just walked out of the place, but it turns out I got to go back and pick up my shit. So
yeah, like I think it was
was just walking to the outhouse at the end of the last season. Like I got to take a dump, guys.
I know why they did it because it looked cool, but I honestly thought that like he was gone, and then this episode's like, well, I forgot. I got to get my toothbrush. Mm. I got to go grab that. So
I had to say a couple of goodbyes. Mm-hmm. Figure out where I'm going to next.
But and so you have his buddy. What's the guy's name that was trying to convince him to stay?
No idea, Andrew. This is your department.
I don't know any of their names.
I never can remember his friend's name.
Yeah, him. Jon Snow's BFF, current right. BFF, because Sam is on a boat with Gilly.
Ed. It's Ed.
Ed. There you go. Yeah. So at this moment, and tell me, was I the only one that was like, something's bad's going to happen? They're not going to let this reunion happen?
Yes, because I was dreading the worst.
I was screaming at the TV going, turn around. Turn around. He's right there. Like, I was like, they never let anything happy happen. So I was really worried. But Sansa rides in on the horse, and she rides in with, what's the female knights? I'm sorry. So many.
Brienne.
Sorry. And now, something that everyone is, before we move on to even the reunion, somebody points out when she's riding in, she makes eye contact with
big redhead wildling.
Yeah, his face? And they basically do the, hey, what's up, you know?
Hey, what you doing?
Which, honestly,
that is one hell of a woman right there.
That's awesome, but I wouldn't want to see the sex.
Are you kidding me?
It'd be so furious and so violent. And
exactly.
And that's just her. I mean,
and you know what the sex would be like? It'd be like when Jessica Jones and Cage got together.
Yeah.
That first time, and they were just busting apart the bed and breaking down walls and shit.
Yeah.
That's what it would be like.
So so then we have a Snow walk up and hugs Sansa. Now, am I correct by saying this is the first time they've been
on screen together?
On screen together?
Since the pilot, I think.
Episode one.
Since episode one. Yeah, obviously. Since episode one. Okay.
It's been a long time since we've seen those two in the same room.
Yeah. She is. Well, now she's taller than him, you know? Like, when they're hugging, it's kind of awkward because he has to hug up.
It's like, hug around the boobs. She's still your sister.
Yeah. See, well, this show, that doesn't matter. So
guys,
that,
I got to admit, though, that that did kind of choke me up, though.
Oh, it just choked everybody up.
Yeah.
But see, my choking up was reserved because all I'm thinking is I know this show. Every time they give you something, they take more things away. So I was like, what's going to come? Something bad's going to happen. Something really bad. And now it's not even like you go and spoil it because, again, they're ahead of the book now. So we don't know what's coming.
They can make up whatever the fuck they want. And what's going to happen is we're going to have the Starks reunite. They've slowly told us where all the kids are, and they're starting to learn where the other ones are, and they're all going to go find each other. And it's going to be wonderful. And no one's going to die.
So Sansa and Jon know Rickon is in Winterfell under the Boltons.
Because the Boltons sent that lovely note explaining where Rickon was.
Yeah. Come see me. He just kept coming.
That was funny. Dear Snow, stop. This is Lord Bolton. Stop.
You got to throw a couple of bastards in there.
Yeah. Like, man, Bolton... Do we agree that he's more hateable than Joffrey's the most hateable character the show's ever had?
I agree completely.
I don't agree. I hated Joffrey so much more than Bolton. They're both evil, yes. But Joffrey was a little itty-bitty bitch. And at least Bolton is a man enough to admit he's crazy.
I think the difference is Joffrey was a psychopath and Bolton is a calculating psychopath.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Bolton just doesn't bother me the way Joffrey got under my skin.
I think that's why Bolton's worse, though, because Joffrey's just a fucking brat who has power, whereas Bolton, like, is calculated dickhead. Like, he's literally cut off someone's penis. Like,
he fed
his brother to a dog.
You don't remember how many whores Joffrey killed.
We're talking about people, not whores. So, when, I mean, if we're thinking in Westeros terms, you know, obviously. Not now. I could talk like that in Westeros terms. I believe it's allowed.
Yes, I'll allow it.
Yeah. So back to the story. Sansa is sitting down and she's by the fireplace having a talk with her brother.
And she's all like, "Remember when I was a dick to you?"
They were really good playing. I mean that you really felt like they were brother and sister. You know the way they were talking to each other.
Yeah. How they start small and were complimenting the soup.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love how later on when they're eating at the big table with Brienne too, and the girls are just like, "I'm not touching this."
And right. What was that, by the way? Was that some sort of
Sansa was given a tongue? I'm pretty sure that was like a cow tongue or a goat or sheep tongue, and I don't know what Brienne was given. It looked terrible.
All the people at the wall have been used to eating this for years, and then you have Sansa and Brienne and Podrick come in and like, "I'll fucking touch this." Yeah. Looks gross.
I love when Sansa was telling Jon by the fire, like, "I was awful, admit it. You know, like, I was a brat. Come on, you could say it." This is when she first asked him to take the home back, to take Bolton
down. Yeah, it's like, "Hey, now that I'm here, you want to go get Winterfell? Because this awful asshole took over our house and I kind of want it back. I want my own house. I want a shower in my shower."
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, she's like, "I miss my bed.
I miss my toilet. I miss my tree.
I miss not being raped all the time."
Oh, my God. You remember not being raped?
That was awesome.
That was the best. That was like 6 years ago. I know. I've had 6 years of rape.
It's true. It's so bad. Like, everybody has so much garbage.
John, I'm married to a midget. Did you know that, John? Yeah. I'm married to a midget. I don't know where he is. I think he's helping out some blonde bitch in Marine. I was like running around with this one other guy, and then he left with my aunt and is now just handling the moon door. I don't know. I've been everywhere.
Yeah. So
Sansa's seen some shit, man.
Sansa has been through a lot. Yeah.
It's like, I picked up this tall bitch just because I was about to die and she's been following me and I couldn't get my stalker registration sent out in time. Came in handy.
Did you guys see the interview with the actor who plays Littlefinger? He said that was his one big misstep. Littlefinger's misstep was that he turned Sansa over to that psychopath.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that he, it was like his first big misjudgment. So, there's that on the table. So.
It is. But before we get to Littlefinger, there was that moment when Brienne walks up to
Missandei.
Yeah.
No, Melisandre.
Melisandre and
the Red Lady.
Right. Yeah.
And she's all like, I killed your Lord and Savior.
I killed Stannis Baratheon. Come at me, dog, is basically what she did.
You mad, bro?
She did look at them both like, what you gonna, like, she walked up and was just like, what the fuck you gonna do, bro? What you gonna do about it?
The red woman looked like the wind was completely knocked out of her sails. She's like, I guess I'll just follow Jon Snow now. I guess he's the Lord. I don't know. Yeah. I guess he's the chosen one. I thought it was Stannis, but apparently now he's dead and I don't know what to do. And I resurrected Jon Snow somehow, so I guess he's the Lord. I don't know. And then Brienne's like, I killed your Lord. I saw him. I shoved my knife into his face. Fuck you.
Here, hold on. I think
Brienne was cutting daggers into her with her eyes. She was like, you know, hey, I know who you are. I know what you've done. Kind of shit. Did you see the way she was staring at her?
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Here, I think I might have that scene.
I know what's up with your old titties, bitch.
I think I have that scene.
What happened to the princess?
I saw what happened. I saw Stannis' forces defeated in the field.
My lady, I'm Ser Davos Seaworth.
We've met before. I was Kingsguard to Renly Baratheon.
Snap.
Before Renly was assassinated with blood.
She needed hype man, like, what's on?
That's in the past now.
This is in the past.
She looks like if Ellen was given steroids.
Doesn't mean I forget. Or forgive. He admitted it, you know?
Oh, here it is.
Who did?
Stannis. Just before I executed him.
Oh, snap. Like, yeah, I execute him. The fuck you gonna do about it? She fucking alpha mailed everybody in that conversation.
Oh, yeah, she did.
Wasn't there a point that Ser Davros asked, what about the princess? Because he I don't think he knows she was dead yet.
Yeah, later on. I think that's later on, but yes, okay. You're correct. Yes, yeah. You're right. I believe he asked about her because of, I think that's a little bit later.
Okay.
Now we go over to what's his name? Too old to breastfeed in the Moondor. And my favorite character.
Well, he's not too old. His mom just died. I think he would still be breastfeeding.
My favorite
character. Robert Aaron.
Yes, my favorite character, Lord Royce, is here in this scene.
Did he just come out of nowhere or was he introduced before?
He's been around before.
Yeah, he's been around.
Yeah, he was around.
Character. I don't remember him.
As a matter of fact, I believe in the books he's one of the first people that's mentioned. So you have Littlefinger coming back for the first time in a while. I mean, since last season, basically. And another person who's grown, Jesus Christ, has tit feet are grown. He is.
Robin is, he's huge now. I mean, yeah. he did a growth leap like Bran did between the first and second season.
Exactly. He's like humongous. So I believe what happens in the scene is Littlefinger accuses Lord Royce of betraying him and the whole Bolton thing.
Well, because he's like, no one knew I was bringing Sansa where I was bringing Sansa. No one knew who I was with. And they just so happened to snatch her right from under us.
Right. And at this point, basically, you could tell that Littlefinger's 100% control of what's his name? Robin.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Robin's just like, what do you want to do, Uncle?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he gave him a falcon as a gift and then Robin is like, I'll whatever you want. I don't give a shit. I got a hawk now.
By the way, he did not take his eyes off that bird after this kid's retarded, right? I mean, he's inbred and retarded and.
Well, yeah, he was getting breastfed.
Such language.
He is retarded. He is, and yeah. He was getting breastfed until he was fucking what, like 16? I don't remember how old he was. But he's too old.
No, I mean, it's fair. Give me a puppy and I'm not going to pay attention. I'm going to agree to whatever you want, Mitch.
Yeah, but don't breastfeed
you
a cherry.
You want to throw Royce out the moon door?
No.
Do not throw me out the moon moon door. Do not throw me out the moon moon door.
Come on.
I was waiting for a sexual pun, but hey.
No moon door for me. Thank you. I can't.
Door. That poor family that lives beneath that fucking door, though.
So basically, Littlefinger has Lord Royce under his control now, you know.
He put him back in his place for sure.
Yeah.
Royce thought he was going to step up there for a second, and Littlefinger was like, wait a minute, hold on. Right. Now you know I'm in control here, not this retarded child.
Yeah.
So.
And that kid is retarded, absolutely retarded.
So does this mean that Littlefinger is now in control of another giant army, like, into play? Because we're starting to see armies swapping powers.
And as a matter of fact, one of the stories we're going to talk about after we recap the episode is somebody listed all the armies in Westeros and their size. So we'll get to that. But the next scene...
Royce, yeah. was this the scene that Littlefinger said, it's time to get into the fray?
No, I'm not sure, but Andrew, yes, just an FYI, okay. Your mic is popping a little bit. It sounds like a bad cord or something. Just an FYI.
Yeah, I'm hearing the same thing on you guys. And you want to call me back?
Or? Yeah. Let me do that because I don't know what's going on. Where was I here?
Well, you were talking about armies, but you were teasing. So I don't know where you wanted to go next after the armies.
Well, I think the next thing that came up was Tyrion was talking.
Oh, yeah. Tyrion starts trying to go
to
all political.
To the masters, to the slave masters.
In Marine. Yeah. So he starts trying to do a whole Abraham Lincoln on Civil War of Marine, where he's trying to negotiate between the slave owners and the slaves and seeing if he could stop the war from happening and stop the infighting from happening.
And the worm is all butthurt. Like, he's all butthurt because Tyrion's pretty smart. He said, well, we're not going to take your slaves away right away. You have 7 years to transition, you know?
I don't know if they were so much butthurt as they were worried that he wasn't of the same mindset as their Khaleesi. Because Tyrion is acting in
Here's why, because Tyrion's smart.
Yeah.
And he knows what he's doing.
Khaleesi had no idea.
Yeah, Khaleesi is just like, honestly, if you were to politicize all of them, Khaleesi was like the Bernie Sanders. You know, where she's like, it's everything. No, but you can't do it the way she wanted to do it. You know, it doesn't work.
But when
that
you
way.
Look at it from Missandei and Grey Worm's perspective, they were slaves and they grew up slaves and they were just happy that someone finally cares about them and set them free. So they want that for everyone. They don't necessarily realize, you know, the politics and everything behind it to make it happen.
Right. And I think I saw after the episode recap, one of the writers was talking about how, you know, they took inspiration from that, from like Abraham Lincoln, where before he wanted to free the slaves, he actually was trying to barter with them and work something out, you know?
Right.
Because he didn't want war.
Right. I mean, he had a good line saying that you can't end slavery and end the war at the same time. There needs to be some sort of overlap period for people to adjust.
Exactly.
And so that's what he was trying to do. And yes, you're right that the two people that used to be slaves kind of didn't like what he was trying to accomplish, but they're also not the smartest of people. I mean, maybe Missandei might be some sort of secret double agent like we were talking about the other week, but Grey Worm definitely is not.
Right.
So he can't see, you know, three chess moves ahead like Tyrion can.
Slavery is the way of our world. You don't need slaves to make money. There haven't been slaves in Westeros for hundreds of years, and I grew up richer than any of you.
I love the surprised look on their faces.
Yeah.
By abolishing slavery without providing a new system to replace it. So, here is the Queen's proposal.
Here's the part.
Slavery will never return to Meereen, but she will give the other cities of Slaver's Bay time to adjust to the new order.
What does that mean?
Instead of abolishing slavery overnight, we will give you 7 years to end the practice. Slaveholders will be compensated for the losses, of course, at fair prices.
And now everyone else there is not very happy. But I think looking at why he's doing it, I think it was a smart move.
Yeah.
Does anybody not agree with what Tyrion's doing?
No, it's incredibly
I agree.
Smart.
And even if it is just a flat out, and I mean, you know, he isn't talking to Daenerys about this yet, but even if it's just a flat out lie, it's at least something to get the other cities to settle down.
Right.
And at least get the Sons of the Harpies at bay for now.
Yeah, 7 years is a really long time for slave owners and a really short, wait, other way around. No, I was right the first time. Really long time for somebody that's like, oh, I'll have my slaves for 7 more years. But then also the slaves are just like, oh my God, this is going to take forever. So it's just kind of, he just threw out a number to start putting it into people's heads that there's an end.
And
he
gave each one of them a whore, too.
Yeah, for fun.
I wish I was a master.
It's very important.
That's how all business meetings should end.
And then Worm and what's her face end up backing Tyrion in front of the other people, because they don't trust him because he's not Khaleesi. And I think again Tyrion's doing a pretty good job considering that he was basically thrown into a world of shit. You know.
Yeah, pretty much.
Then we move over to the next scene, the odd couple, that's traveling. Fuck, what's their fucking names?
As Dario and Jorah.
Yes, soon to be fucking rock boy.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all like talking trash. He's like, oh yeah, I banged her. And I was like, well, I want to bang her too. I'm like, all right, we get it.
And he's all like, you can't keep up with her, old man. I had sex with her and it was tiring once.
Yeah, so, you know, all that. And then he notices that he has the disease too. He says to leave all the weapons. To leave all the weapons in the because apparently the city, if they find you with weapons, they kill you. It's a holy city, right? You're not allowed to have weapons.
The Dothraki landing.
Yeah, the Dothraki.
Is it Jario?
Jorah?
Jorah. He's way into that dagger with the butt and the breast on it.
No, Jorah's the other one. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah. He kissed it.
He did.
It's like, Jesus, dude, you've got Khaleesi. What are you doing with your... making love to that dagger right in front of us. What are you doing?
To be fair, Khaleesi fucked him so good that he turned into a different person. Remember? The first person was a blonde dude.
Yeah.
Completely different. But
hey, it was good that he was in love with that dagger because he kept it on him even though Jorah told him not to and got him out of a bind. And I like his solution after he stabs a guy. He just like bashes his head in. It's like, there, problem solved. You don't see a stab wound anymore.
Doug Wheelies, I just started the first season. Sean Bean is fucking great. Can't wait to see what his character's up to in later seasons.
He does good, Doc.
He does.
Who said that?
Don't worry.
Doc Wheelie.
He's still around in season 6.
So, anyway, the odd couple runs into a couple of Dothraki hoodlums. And
some drunkards.
They don't buy that they're traitors.
Not for an instant.
No. So, they start fighting him, blah, 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 blah. He kept, what's his face, kept the knife. Killed him and then beat him with a rock to make it look like it wasn't a stab wound, but
a
drunk fight. Yeah,
just your run of the mill rock bashing.
Right, right.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah, that scene was cool. I mean, it's. I'm wondering if that rock disease is already affecting him because he seemed to like have a lot of trouble in that fight. You know, and he's usually pretty decent.
He was getting his ass kicked.
He was getting his ass kicked big time.
So I'm wondering if that has something to do with
it. I'd like to see you have a rock disease taking over you, and if you could still travel halfway across the world to find your woman that doesn't want you back, and then see if you can battle.
I have a rock disease. I have a rock disease. So, yeah, and I've traveled very far.
He's probably really parched, too. He always looks really thirsty. But then again, that might be the rock disease.
Well, he did on Downton Abbey, too, so it's just his look.
All right. So now to the Real Housewives of Dothraki is the next scene. They're all in the temple, all the old, like, bitches of the old leaders or whatever they were.
Right. Where Khaleesi makes a new friend in, like, 2 seconds.
Yeah, immediately, you know. That 12-year-old. She was
15 at the time.
Right. So they come up with a plan that you see later, yada, yada, yada. Then we move over to the beggar Pope and what's her face?
Marjorie.
Who, by the way, still looks super hot, no matter how ugly they try to make her look. She's still very attractive.
I agree.
So we have Hobo Pope talking to her. And
which, by the way, the internet pointed out, Hobo Pope looks just like Pope Francis.
He does.
And
he really does.
It freaks me out now.
Yeah. So they let her see her. They let her see her totally straight brother. And he's already broken. And I guess
totally
if they admit it, they're going to be shamed. I think that's what the outcome is. Now, again, you have right. That was a pretty short scene. Anything you want to talk about in that scene before we move on to the next one, guys?
Well, just how strong Marjorie is, and Sir Loras is broken already.
What a bitch!
Yeah, Marjorie is a strong-ass woman.
Marjorie is somebody that, honestly, I think if she gets through this, Cersei's going to end up respecting her.
Yeah.
Honestly believe that, because I think that Marjorie has a lot of the same traits as Cersei's does, and I think in the end she's going to end up siding with Cersei because of it.
Of course. I mean, the women that suffered together stay together, right?
Yeah. So now you have Cersei walking in the next scene, talking to her retard son. And Beardy McProfit is there. And again, he keeps fucking not respecting Cersei. And I don't know why they do that. Like, whether or not she's the queen, she still has fucking the mountain.
I don't know if they care about the mountain.
I personally thought it was hilarious when he very slowly walked around the entire table and left the room.
Yep.
That had me laughing.
Yep. I just think that's the way he walks.
Well, we found out in, I think, season two, that's an act. He actually isn't that crippled and infirmed. He's a very spry guy, but that's like a deal he's putting on in front of people.
Right.
So.
Right, which is smart. So you have Cersei talking to her son. She finds out that the High Sparrow has been influencing him. And by the way, what a shitty king he is.
He's just the worst. But what are you going to do?
At first, she gets mad at him, at the king, and then she realizes, no, I'm going to work this another angle. I believe that's when Cersei walks into the small council meeting.
Yeah.
Hold on. We have a reenactment of how the slavers meeting went with Tyrion.
Sure.
And right now, it's actually on my Google Hangouts.
Okay, put it on. Is Sterling humping a pillow?
He is.
That's not.
I don't know if that's a accurate portrayal.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Sterling
though.
Was a slaver.
I wish I could see this.
Hilarious.
Or maybe cut off his balls like the worm. So then you have her walk into the small council. Basically, she's planning something.
And the small council is all like, can't sit here.
What is she planning is the question.
She wants to get fucking Pope Francis of Assisi out.
No, I know what she wants to do, but what is the plan to do it?
I think this was the scene where they said, we can't let Marjorie walk through the streets naked and have shit thrown at her.
Exactly.
And I think the plan was to get the Tyrell army into King's Landing to take care of Pope Francis of Assisi.
Right.
So.
But she said something about that they weren't going to do anything. They were going to stand down.
No, so that was the Lannister army.
Oh. Yeah.
Like it was the religious cult people. They're like, blah blah blah, the Lannister army stands down because we have people everywhere,
right,
or something like that, but they never said the Tyrell army,
right?
So
got it. So they're working their two armies in tandem somehow, because they do know that that religious sect has a lot of people that just kind of hide around as beggars and poor people, and then they come out of the woodwork, and then you realize how many there are.
Go back.
Oh,
have you given him up for good?
Of course, I want him back.
And stand aside and let the people that took him from you be destroyed.
I'll say it again. Turned around on Cersei, because that fucking Hobo Pope is the worst thing. What's his end game?
I mean, I still hate Cersei, though, but...
Again,
I don't hate her
as much as before.
I didn't hate her a lot before. Now I 100% do not hate her. She completely turned me around. She's just all about protecting what's hers and really hates this stupid religious guy. And she just wants him out of her town. And she wants her son back. And she wants to make sure that no one else in her family dies. She's pretty much had half her family, if not more than half her family, die or leave her. And she's just paranoid about that stupid witch prophecy. That's all.
Well, you know, this was the scene where she said, a lot of people are going to die, better them than us.
Yep.
So
I agree. Next scene, we have Theon getting back home.
Yes. My favorite scene in the entire episode.
Yeah.
Guys, you know, you guys know how big of an advocate I am for Theon's redemption.
Yep.
This sent chills through me. I loved this scene better than the ending scene, even, I think. But
yeah, two brother sister reunions in this episode. Two
yes.
of them, which was great. And yeah, I agree. He went there to support his sister. To tell her, no, you're the king, you know, you're the ruler, you know, now that the dad's dead.
His sister was pissed.
Yeah, she was mad.
And she's good looking. And guys, what's his name? Is it,
Wait, his sister's not good looking.
I think so.
Are you kidding me?
I'm way into her, guys.
She looks like someone that would serve you porridge. Like,
she might clean up. She might just
clean up into what? An uglier lady? Like, I can't imagine.
His name is Alfie. It's Alfie Allen. He's Lily Allen's brother. But he did some of the best acting in this. When he started crying,
right?
I lost it. Guys, I lost it. I cried twice during this episode, and this was the second time. I loved this scene better than anything in the entire series. Wow. This was powerful for me.
Listen to you. You're the only one.
That doesn't matter anymore. Stop crying. Look at me. Tell me what you want.
You should rule the Iron Islands. Let me help you.
I agree. Some fantastic acting in that scene.
Yeah.
Then we move on to everybody's most hated, we were talking about, Lord Bolton. At least everyone's most hated who's alive. Let's preface it by that. We have Crazy Wildling Woman is presented to him. The one who was taking care of Rickon. Sure. Yeah, the one who was taking care of Rickon.
And she tried to do her little sexual whims on him.
And during it, Marie was like, oh, she's going to kill him. I go, nope, he's going to kill her.
Yeah.
He's going to kill her.
I was like, I don't know. It could go either way. It just matter of who's faster with the knife. Bolton is faster.
By the way, guys, this has always worked for Osha. She has always been, she seduced Theon, remember?
Yep.
And she has always been able to work that body and get what she wanted. And this time, oh my God, that was a graphic ass scene. Lord Bolton shoved that dagger. Where did he have that, by the way?
I have no idea.
I think in his belt.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
He seemed to pull it out of his belt. I don't think he pulled it from the table. That was too fast.
Wow, that went in deep, and she fell over and was just dead in seconds, man. But that was a, wow.
Mm. Well, that's what happens when you get stabbed in the neck.
Yeah.
You don't last long.
So we see that happens, and now.
So what do you think is going to happen with Rickon now that he doesn't have Osha there?
I still think that I still believe that the theory that we were talking about last week is still true.
Which is
the theory that Rickon is actually was turned over on purpose.
With a purpose.
With a purpose to try to take Bolton out. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but, you know.
Well, regardless of purpose or not, Jon Snow is now going back to Winterfell because he heard that Rickon is there.
Right, and that's the next the next scene you have. They're all sitting at the table over at the The Night's Watch. Yeah, the Night's Watch. And this is when, actually, you know what? Let's go ahead and hear the letter be read that Bolton sends Snow.
This is so great.
Also, this scene, you have What's-His-Face flirting with Brienne. By, like, when he eats his food, he's just staring at her. All right, get to the letter. Come on.
Get to the letter part.
Just,
sorry about the food.
Oh, yeah. This is when she's eating the tongue.
That's right.
See if I get to the letter.
I'm not Lord Commander anymore.
Here it is. I'm not Lord Commander anymore. I wish you would have said, you know what I mean, John. Would you read the letter? Fucking, really? You're going to get specific on me now? Be a dick. All right, here we go.
To the traitor, Ambassador Jon Snow. You allowed thousands of wildlings past the wall. You have betrayed your own kind.
And I'm a Nigerian prince with $10 million U.S. I just need you to send me.
Betrayed the North. Winterfell is mine, bastard. Come and see.
That's one bastard.
Your brother Rickon is in my dungeon.
That's actually two bastards.
His direwolf skin is on my floor. Come and see. I want my bride back. Send her to me, bastard, and I will not trouble you or your wildling lovers. Keep her from me, and I will ride north and slaughter every wildling man, woman, and babe living under your protection. You will watch as I skin them living.
Et cetera, et cetera. Yada, yada, yada. He doesn't know how to read this part in front of his sister.
Go ahead,
Andrew.
This is where Sansa grabs a note from him and
starts reading it.
Starts reading it, and he's, you know, so lovingly called her his bride, and then he proceeds to tell everybody how he's going to rape her.
Of course.
Yeah.
She's more of the same.
You will watch as my soldiers take turns raping your sister. You will watch as my dogs devour your wild little brother. Then I will spoon your eyes from their sockets and let my dogs do the rest. Come and see. Ramsay Bolton.
Yours in Christ, Lord Ramsay Bolton.
Oh, and Marie, I also forgot, last week, Sansa found out Arya's still alive. So that there's that connection.
That's true.
Yeah, that's the point I was making. I mean, aside from Robb Stark, who is long gone with mommy and daddy, all the Stark siblings pretty much know that there's a chance that the other ones are still out there somewhere. I mean, they don't really know where Bran is, per se, but now they know Arya's out there and they know Rickon is out there.
Right.
But Bran knows Jon is alive because he saw him, remember? And he was talked out of going to meet him.
Oh, yeah, that's right. When he was...
Yeah.
Bran doesn't know that Jon Snow is dead and now alive again, though.
That's true.
That's true.
But then again, it doesn't matter. The end result is that he is alive. Now we get into the last scene of the show, a scene that was fucking amazing. We have Dany walking in to where, I guess, where all the heads of the Dothraki.
All the calls.
The calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they all meet. And she walks in there and...
In a very... flammable hut illuminated by four pillars of fire.
You know what those are called?
What?
Braziers.
That's funny.
Those things are called braziers. They are.
By the way, very, very flammable hut. That's a good point you pointed that out. I mean, go ahead.
I think what it is they're filled with oil.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
They were fueled by oil because when she tipped him over, you could see that there was this oil spill out, and then the fire just like shot right after it.
Right.
But you know, I'm not going to play it because obviously none of us speak Dothraki. But
I just have to say, right before it happened, I was like, called it.
Yeah.
She's going to burn this motherfucker to the ground.
This is a difference from the book. I read somewhere that in the book, she's only fireproof when the dragons are born. After that, she's not fireproof anymore. But in the show, I guess she's still fireproof. So
sure, why not?
I mean, I don't care. I don't read the books, but I just one of the things that I read. And man, first off, one of the biggest rumors, and let's address it. We're not going to not. One of the biggest rumors for the longest time was that the actress who plays Dany, what's her name?
Amelia Clark.
Amelia Clark was no longer going to do nude scenes. Well, apparently that's not true.
Are we sure?
Full frontal.
Are we sure that that's her?
Yes, that's her because I read an article today. She said, yep, that's me. The last time I did a nude scene was in season 3. I saw her in an interview with her. So it definitely was her. It was not Photoshop.
So it was not a body double like with Cersei?
No, it was not.
And when I looked at her, I'm like, yeah, those are her tits because I remember
they
looked very similar to the ones the last time that she showed them when she got burned alive.
She looks great still. She still looks so good. And
but the reason I'm going to address what you said, that the rumor of her never doing nude scenes again, she said she's not going to do it for gratuitous reasons, but if it helps progress the story along, she's open to it.
Right. Which
she
did
say that in an interview.
Which this did. Yes. I mean, and by the way, again, this is a show that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, they sexualize women. This is a show where a woman is standing completely naked, and it's not sexual, it's badass. Like, she literally just killed a bunch of, I mean, of course it's still hot, but my point is, the point of it isn't sexual, and that wasn't a joke when I said hot because of the fire. So,
she's also hot, though.
Yeah, so she burns them all down, walks outside in flaming glory.
Naked head to toe.
And every single one of them bowed to her.
Yeah.
That was awesome, because the first time that happened, only a couple people witnessed it, right? It wasn't like...
No, it wasn't the entire Khal Drogo's army. It was whoever had stayed around. It wasn't a whole lot of them, though.
It was when the dragons were born at the last episode of season one.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was only like about 12, 13 people that saw this. But now the entire Dothraki nation knows she's this magical being.
Right. So all in all, as I said, one of the better episodes. I mean, just so good. And the show this season has been fucking great. But the next story, since we were talking about the armies, was standing armies. The world of Game of Thrones is a state of consistent warfare, and it can be hard to keep all those armies straight. But what are the actual sizes of Westeros and Essos standing armies, based on the clues given in the series? Well, here we go. Night's Watch, there's 39 Night Watch members currently active.
How many?
39.
39.
So not even 40.
Yeah. Wildlings.
Well, they used to have 40, but Jon Snow left.
Yeah. Wildlings. There's 2,000 wildlings plus one giant.
That's nice.
The Boltons, they have 11,000.
Well, that's a lot.
That goes against what Sansa had said in this last episode. She said he has about 5,000.
Bolton?
Yeah.
What I'm guessing there is they're counting all of the other northern houses.
Yeah, that'll fight for him, I believe.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yeah. Then you have Dorne, 45,000. The Tyrells, 65,000.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
Why don't we ever see the Tyrell land? Ever?
I can tell you.
We haven't yet, have we? No.
Not really. And then now we have... Then the very, very impressive one, at least to me, is the Targaryens. They have 58,000 Dothraki, plus 8,000 Unsullied now, plus... Three dragons.
I love the three dragon icon at the end. Like, they have three dragons.
It's kind of cute.
So now, theory is that, and then of course the last one's White Walkers, which is potentially every man or woman or child who has ever died. So I guess the White Walkers have the most.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
But I mean, if we're looking at, we have the Targaryens, and you would assume that the Night's Watch and the Wildlings would all eventually join the Targaryen army. I think that they're pretty formidable of an army anyway.
Okay, now this list is about standing armies, but what about, houses that are sympathetic or will fight for the Starks, you know, like the
right.
I think that's, oh, that's a good point.
And, you know.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't account for that. I don't know if they bundled that in with the Boltons. Because that's...
There's no way the Arryns are with the Boltons, do you guys think?
No, they're not, but they would be in the north, and right now the Boltons are considering that they pretty much have the north. So I don't know. This graph is not accurate. It's not explaining all the little houses.
Well, I just wanted to...
But it's a good point. So, okay, so let's say Jon Snow is leaving the Night's Watch... And he's taking the wildlings with him and the one giant, and he's going south, and perhaps he's getting Littlefinger's men from the Moon Doors people to help him out, because that guy is sending over help for Sansa, right? So potentially those two groups could fight and try to get the Boltons back, right? And Winterfell back from the Boltons?
Yeah.
So
and they would be coming from two different directions, too.
Right. So perhaps that could match up, get the Boltons. Then they would need to start going south. I don't know where Tyrell is.
So now, also, what about the Iron Islands?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. That's for them.
Exactly. Are they considered the North still? Because they thought that they were the lords in the North. Like, the North is just kind of all over the place, and it's not accounted for.
But they're more of a navy, right? It's.
Well, I mean, they are, but they still
have some sort of force.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, they're going to be a really awesome navy because the ships keep getting burned in other lands. The Lannisters had their ships burned at one point, and now Marine had their ships burned. So ships are not to be found in a lot of places.
Right. Hmm.
Well, there's a theory on the High Sparrow.
And that's a good point. The Lannisters aren't on this chart either.
I know. There's a theory on the High Sparrow.
We got a lot of problems with this chart, Royce.
I didn't make it, guys. I just found it.
It's good.
Time Magazine posted my theory about what the High Sparrow told Tommen and what it means for the future of King's Landing. It is my belief that the High Sparrow told Tommen about the Tyrell's involvement in Joffrey's murder, judging by the tears in his eyes when he's about to tell Cersei. It seemed to be the worst possible news. I believe it's Sir Loras who revealed his information, as he seemed absolutely broken by his solitary confinement. Immediately after Tommen tells her the news, Cersei and Jaime show up to the small council with a plan to invite the Tyrell army into King's Landing to deal with the Seven and protect Margaery from a talk of atonement. I believe this is a ruse by Cersei to draw the Tyrells into her scheme. Why would Cersei do this? It accomplishes multiple things and is quite an ingenious move, but may backfire terribly if Tyrells are ready for it. The Tyrells picking a fight with the Seven will create an unrest among the followers, citizens of King's Landing. They will turn on and blame the Tyrells, with the Lannisters standing down. This creates a war between two of Cersei's least favorite factions, the citizens of King's Landing, who treated her like garbage during the Walk of Atonement, and the family responsible for her son's murder. Every dead body is a win. The Lannisters' army is now in perfect position to finish off the Tyrells and enact revenge for the fallen king. The dissolution of the Seven and the death of Loras, Margaery, Lady Olana, and the High Sparrow would be sprinkles on top of Cersei's Revenge Sunday. This could all backfire, however, the Tyrell army is allowed inside the walls of King's Landing, ready themselves to overtake the Lannisters' army.
True that.
And claim the Iron Throne for themselves.
So this theory is saying Cersei is pitting her two enemies against each other to fight them out to the death.
He says, I think there's a few additional tidbits that could be my confirmation, speaking and reading too much between the lines. But this is one. During the conversation between High Sparrow and Margaery about his past, he mentions a feast, drinking wine, sleeping bodies on the floor, and the endless struggle to maintain his position. Some interesting symbols at play there. When Tommen speaks with Cersei, she says that Margaery's safety is paramount, and immediately ask, you don't like Margaery, do you? Almost in a way that implies you were right about her. Then Cersei mentions that queens and kings demand respect, and High Sparrow doesn't respect them. Immediately after this is when Tommen says that he has to tell her a secret the High Sparrow told him. I read this in a way that Tommen's about to prove her wrong about the High Sparrow. Joffrey was king, and the High Sparrow has gotten to the bottom of the true killer's identity. Seemingly, he doesn't care about the king and queens. The High Sparrow seems to be manipulating Tommen, and the information is the trump card that will keep him in Tommen and hopefully Cersei's good graces.
So what they're saying is that the High Sparrow told Tommen that the Tyrells had Joffrey killed.
Basically, I believe is what the theory is. And it makes sense, because if you look at Tommen's face, like, he looked pretty distraught, you know, when he's talking to Cersei.
How would he know?
Well, that's
how
a theory.
How would High Sparrow know who killed Joffrey?
So that's an even better question.
During the small council scene, Jaime says the king has been talking regularly with the High Sparrow about the queen and Sir Loras. It does seem as Tommen would be bothered by Walking of Atonement for this commitment.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
He got it from Sir Loras.
Yes.
That's how the High Sparrow knows.
Yep. Almost like the High Sparrow has flipped the Tommen to his side against his wife and brother-in-law.
Loras knew how Joffrey died?
Well, was it's Loras his mom.
It's his mom, yeah.
No, I know it was his mom, Grandma. But was Loras in on it?
Possible. Also during the small council scene, notice the look on Cersei's face when Lady Olenna mentions, many will die no matter what we do. Better them than us. Cut to a smug satisfaction on Cersei's face as to say, I hope there's many deaths and you'll be one of them. And as someone else has pointed out, Reigns of Castamere is playing in the background.
Oh, shit. I didn't even notice
what
that.
What is that? Did I miss something? What's Reigns of Castamere?
It's that song they played at the Red Wedding when the Lannisters had the Starks killed.
Okay. As Usurpers points out, as someone points out, when Tommen is about to tell Cersei the secret, she holds her hand to his heart and Joffrey's ring is showing dead center and frame. So that's the theory. What does everyone think?
I agree completely. Wow. That's a blow, man. Wow.
That might be what's going on.
I like that spin on it. I like things that turn on a way that I wasn't expecting, and that was definitely not something I was expecting.
Right.
I really have no idea how this whole Cersei, Margaery thing is going to play out at all. I can't see past it. All I see is Cersei just worried about her kids dying in her own power. And
what's probably going to happen is when this whole thing goes down and the Tyrell army comes in and there's fighting, I think Tommen is going to get killed then, mm-hmm. making the prophecy true that all of Cersei's sons die.
Yep.
Oh, you might be right. Then wait. Well, then, okay, so here's a question. When Tommen eventually dies, which is the way it's leading to, who's next in line?
That's the big question, because...
I mean, I know, but who would be... next in line using their rules, I guess, is my question.
Well, there's...
I think I read something the way it worked. It was a really backwards, weird explanation, but it was Cersei.
Because she's the only one. She's the only one alive from the...
Something about her bloodline, and it goes way back and wraps around, and then she would become the queen.
Well, here's what's going to happen. This is my complete guess. I think that all that setup's going to happen, and Cersei's going to use that to kill Tommen. Cersei's going to kill Tommen because I think the High Sparrow has turned absolutely everybody, basically has Tommen on her side, and I think he's going to try to side with the High Sparrow when this whole thing goes down. And I think
Cersei would never kill her own son.
Okay, fine. Then I'm wrong.
All of her motivations are pointing to saving her
son. Cersei would never kill her own son. Yeah, they would never fuck in front of their dead kid. No, you're right. They're really upstanding, moral people. Of course they would never do that.
No, what I'm saying, I don't think that they're upstanding people at all. But if she has one thing that she's all about, it's her kids.
She was going to kill her brother, Tyrion.
Yeah, because she doesn't trust him. And wasn't Tyrion part of the whole prophecy?
Exactly. Perfect. Because she doesn't trust him. And I think she's starting not to trust Tommen. The way she reacted when first he was like he wasn't going to do anything, he was like, that's the person who shamed your mother. And then she had something change where she was like, no, I know, you're the king. You should never, like... I think at that moment she realized, fuck, this guy got to him. Now, or someone's going to try to kill him and she's not going to stop him. I'm telling you. That's my theory, because at this point, I think the way she's looking is they're going to die anyway, but just the theory.
Oh, she might start thinking that she fulfills her own prophecy.
Exactly.
That it was destined to be.
Yep. Any other theories we have, guys, before we wrap up?
Wow. I'm blown away.
It's a lot, right? It's a lot to take in.
I still think, or maybe I'm just holding out for hope, that somehow... Jon Snow and Daenerys will team up.
Right.
Because whether or not, you know, they're on one side of the world or the other side of the world, there's still White Walkers coming. We saw them in the preview for next week's episode. Mm-hmm. That was freaky as fuck.
A lot of them, too. Their army is huge.
I don't know why Bran was standing. I don't know why the leader of the White Walkers was right in front
of
his
face. And it looks like he could see him. Didn't it look like one of the White Walkers could see him?
Yeah, it looked like they were looking at him. So it wasn't like he was night visioning.
And they've already shown that people in the visions end up seeing him, like, you know, or hearing him at least.
Or maybe.
I'm so embarrassed to say this. My TiVo cut that off. I didn't get to see the preview for next week. That sounds crazy, though. Wow.
Yeah, it was a clip. It was just a 2-second shot of Bran standing outside the tree that he's been seeing all his visions. And the full White Walker army was right in front of them.
All right. Any other? I mean, that's a lot of theories. Anything else we wanna? Any other theories you want to do before we wrap up, guys? No, I think we did a lot of theories already, especially the High Sparrow one. I'm really digging. All right, guys. Next week, tune in. It's the episode 5 of season 6. We'll definitely be talking about it. Same time on morelikeradio.com, 10 p.m., or download the podcast. We're out of here, guys. Thanks for listening.
Fuck the king. Knowledge is power. Joffrey, Cersei, Walder Frey.